I liked what John said, and he may not have said it quite this bluntly, but your purpose as a father or as a husband or a grandfather in your family is not to create a home that is just characterized by peace or by success or accomplishment. All those things will be true, but they will be true because we are trying to make our families appropriate disciples of Jesus Christ. That's the number one job. So when I started thinking in terms of knowing your children, I got to thinking, well, why do I need to know my children? Why is that important for me to know them? And I'll tell you what I'm going to do in my session. I'm going to throw out as much information as I can, spew it out as quickly as I can, with as little detail as I can, so that I can get a bunch of stuff out there, and then you can come back and say, what did you mean by this? And if you don't say it, then it wasn't important to you. So, hang on, buckle up your seat belts. We're in for a quick ride, all right? Why is it important for us to know our children? Well, because you can't train them, and you can't teach them very well if you don't know them and know how they learn and know what touches them and what gets to them and what turns them on and what turns them off, what irritates them. You got to know those things. You will exasperate your children and provoke them to wrath if you don't understand what makes each child different. I'll give you an example. As a father, when my children were small, I have three daughters. I have three daughters. I have three sons-in-law. They're the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I never let them know which one's which. And I have eight grandchildren. And when my daughters were little and we'd go to a mall or someplace, they did what children always do. They were taken by everything around them, and they would walk looking around at everything, and I would stumble over them trying to move them along to get them to move in a direction. So I would take my hand and palm the top of their heads and direct them. I would just move them, and when it was time to come to an end, I'd turn their head and we'd walk that way. And I thought I was doing a good thing and expediting things. What I was doing was irritating them no end. They were furious at what I was doing to them. And it wasn't until one of them one day just finally said, Daddy, I hate it when you do that, that I realized what I was doing. You got to know your kids if you want to make them disciples. You got to know what works with them, what doesn't work with them. So that's very important, and you have to earn their trust. And so knowing your children is important in making disciples of Jesus Christ. And why is that difficult? Well, because it takes time. And I dare say that's the one commodity we men give the least and give most grudgingly to our children. It's time. Because we are breadwinners, and we are providers, and we are protectors. And all those things are important to us as men, and we realize we have to do that, nobody else can, but that takes away from the time that we would spend with our children. It also drains our resources. Knowing your children takes our resources, not just our time, but our skills and our money and all those other things that go with that. And it's difficult because it takes opening ourselves to them. You've got to open yourself up, and we men are not good at that. We are not good at that. We are task-oriented, action-oriented. God made us that way. We are not relationally oriented. All of us are to some degree, most of us to a poor degree, some of us to a higher degree, but we are much more action-oriented than relationally oriented. And so, to develop relationships with our kids requires us to kind of get on our knees and get down on the floor, figuratively and literally, and open ourselves up to those children. I love the fact that I got to watch John this morning, and did you watch him get touched by the things he was talking about regarding his wife, particularly, and his children? That's not a typical admirable trait among men of the world, but it is among men of God. It is among men of God. And I get emotional when I talk about my children, when I talk about my wife. Those are important things to me. And I get emotional when I talk about my God. I take that personally, and my Lord did something for me nobody else has ever done. And if that doesn't move you at times to tears, you don't understand what he did for you, brothers. You just don't understand. So to have that kind of home, it's difficult. It is not easy for us. It takes humbling. And it takes that thing John talked about, that I don't think is a genetic trait with the Haleys. I think it's probably a man trait, and that's patience or lack thereof. We are not always patient. We're doers. We want to accomplish things. Let's get it done. Let's get it done. We're good at snapping the fingers and saying, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's move it, move it. What do you mean you don't understand? I explained it twice. Well, we need patience. It is difficult for us to be patient with children, but it is required. I think about the guy who was pushing the grocery cart through the store and had a little child in the cart sitting up, you know. He's pushing the cart, little child's reaching up there and grabbing stuff off the shelves, and every time he'd get close, grabbing this, and then he'd put something in the cart, and the little kid was getting it out, and all along the man was saying to him, just be kind, Henry, be kind, Henry. Stop, stop, think about it, Henry. Don't do that, Henry, be patient, Henry. And that kid was doing that over and over and over again. Finally, a lady came up, and she said, I got to tell you something. She said, I know you've got a difficult child there at that age, but I am so impressed that you're so kind to little Henry. And he said, you don't understand, lady, I'm Henry. I think sometimes that's a problem. You know, we just need to be that way. We got to talk to ourselves. Be patient. Be kind. It's okay. We'll get through this. That's important. All right. Now, here's what I did with my topic. I thought, you know what, if Jesus' main job was making disciples, if that was his work, how he did that with his disciples probably ought to be a good model for how we love our children and know our children. Because I like the way Jesus spent his time with the disciples so that he could know them. So I've got 3 points for you. I want to show you how the relationship between Jesus and his disciples is applicable for the fathers, and then I want to give you those points. Jesus wanted more than anything else that his disciples would become followers of his God. Jesus was the go-between. Jesus was, as John talked about it, God with flesh on him or skin on him. And so when Jesus could say to the disciples, here's what I'm doing, this is the God you're following when you follow me. That's exactly my role as a father with my children and my grandchildren. And let me go one step further. Some of you are in this audience and you don't have children, you don't have grandchildren, and you may never. Some of the most important spiritual mentors in my life, some of the most important, were not my physical relations. Now, some of them are. My father died 2 months ago. Great spiritual leader in our family. I miss him tremendously on a day like this. But I had a mentor who was in college when I was in junior high. I watched him do things in the church context that I didn't see other young men like him do. And he made a difference in my life. I had a mentor who was an older man in the congregation about the age of my father who took a particular interest in me for whatever reason and spent time with me and talked to me both before and after church and took me off at times on my own. And I wondered at the time, why is that man doing this? I'm not a troubled kid. I'm not a drug addict. I'm not rebellious against my parents. That man saw something in me that he didn't think was rising to my potential. And he worked at that, and he brought me to that point. And I'll never forget that man for what he did. You may be that spiritual mentor for somebody that's not your children, your direct offspring, or your grandchildren, or a brother or a sister in the flesh. But in the spirit, you have a responsibility, and people are watching. Be that leader. Jesus wanted more than anything that his disciples would follow God and that they would be God's instruments. And so everything he did was done to bring them to that point. That's my job as a father. That's my job as a grandfather. To bring my children and grandchildren to the point of being instruments who can be used by God. And that is much more than just wanting companionship. I love the relationship I have with my daughters. I love it. It's a very deep, intimate relationship. And I love that with each one of them. But that is not my primary goal or purpose as a father, to have a relationship with my daughters. That's not the primary thing. It's a byproduct of what I am trying to make them. I want them to be disciples of Jesus Christ. And if my companionship with them helps in developing that, that's good, but that's not the primary thing. Let me tell you one more thing it's not. It is not living vicariously through them. I see that in fathers more than I do in mothers. Fathers who want their sons to be great in sports because either the father was or wasn't great in sports, or wants them to be some intellectual because the father is an intellectual or wasn't an intellectual and wants them to be what he's not, and trying to live through them vicariously. I'll tell you, I see it all the time. I see it on playing fields where the kids are out there and they're playing a nominal game, trying to have fun in the game, or maybe not even very engaged in the game. Meanwhile, the parents are on the sideline having apoplexy, trying to play the game vicariously for their kids. And they're wrought up and steamed about everything and excited about everything. They're dancing when their kids score and the kids are shrugging their shoulders and walking away from it. That is not my main job, to live vicariously through my children. My job is to make them disciples of Jesus Christ. And so, as Jesus did with his disciples, I need to do with my children. What did he do? Three things. Number one, live among them. Why live among them? By that I mean get involved in their lives. Get involved in their lives. Jesus did that because it was necessary to mentor them. He wanted the disciples to see how he operated on a daily basis. So he took the disciples with him everywhere he went. You know, Marty was a professor at Florida College, and there were times he spent with his students in class. But Marty never said, I want all my students to come home with me. We're going to eat supper together. We're going to go to bed at the same time. We're going to get up tomorrow morning. We're going to eat breakfast. If you're in my class, you live with me for the next semester. He didn't do that because he wasn't trying to make disciples of his students. He was a professor instructing them intellectually. But we are called upon to make disciples of our children. And you do that when you live with them. When you let them see you. Play with them. Play with your children. Don't tell them to go out and play all the time. Play with your children from the time they're very small till the time they're growing up. Do things with them. I'm like John. I'm going to give you some examples. It's not that we did everything right, but we did some things right. And one of the things we did right was have a game night every week. We had a game night. We played games. Our kids didn't all like every game, but they played games, and they learned how to do that. And they grew to love that because not because of the games themselves, but because of the interaction. They knew it was a time we were going to sit down together, and we were going to have fun. Whether they wanted to or not, they were going to have fun. And they grew to love that concept or that idea. And to this day, my daughters are called by their friends. They're the games people. You know, you want to do something, get one of the Walker girls. They love to play games because they learned that. Why did we do that? It wasn't just because I like having fun. It was because that was a way to interact with them. It was an easy way to do that. Let me tell you how you don't do that. Hey, come on, kids. I've got a DVD. We're going to watch a movie. There is no interaction in watching a movie together. You're just all staring at the same screen. And occasionally something funny might happen. You turn and laugh at the person next to you. Wasn't that funny? But there's no interaction there. Not unless you say, after the movie, we're going to talk about it. I remember a young boy. It was Phil Roberts' son, Kyle, and Phil had told me Kyle was watching these things called Wallace and Gromit. They were these stop-action claymation figures. And I'd never heard of it. And Phil was telling me about it and said, Kyle loves Wallace and Gromit. So I called Kyle and I said, hey, Kyle, I want to borrow Wallace and Gromit DVD of yours. Could I do that? And he said, yeah. He was about six, seven maybe. And I said, that'd be great. I'm going to borrow it and then I'm going to watch it. And then maybe we could get together afterwards and talk about it. And he said, why? And I thought, yeah, why? I mean, what's the purpose in all that? Well, do things that you will interact with your children over. Play with them. I'll tell you one more thing. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 7 through 9, those things about teaching your children when you walk and when you come in and when you go out, notice that's when you do those things. It's when you rise up and when you go out and when you come in. Take them with you. When I was a boy, on one occasion, my father met my mother, me, and my sister for lunch. And at the end of lunch, my dad said to me, I was probably 7 years old, my dad said, get in the truck, I'm going to take you to work with me for the rest of the day. I was 7 years old. I remember that event to this day. I'm not even sure I remember very well what my father did for a living. I knew he was in sheet metal. He would put duct work, like you see here, in buildings. And sometimes they would put insulation on the outside of the duct. It would be insulation that would be sleeves they called pants. For years, I told people that what my dad did for a living when I was a little boy was he dressed ducks. Because he put pants on duct, D-U-C-T. I thought he'd put pants on ducks, D-U-C-K-S. And I thought he doesn't do a very good job because most of the ones I see are naked. But I went with my father to his workplace. Have you taken your kids to the workplace? Have you taken them? Have you let them see what you do? Just sit in a room and watch what you do. That's what Jesus did with the disciples. He took them to work with him. He wanted them to see how he interacted with people in the good times and the negative situations. He interacted with his enemies as well as his friends and the interested parties. Have you done that? As a grandfather, have you taken your grandchildren to work with you? To let them watch you and see what you're doing? We are action-oriented, not relationally oriented, but we need to develop those relationships. Let them see what you do. Second, look at them as individuals. Look at them as individuals. By that I mean pay attention to each one of them, not just the kids, but each one of those is different. Jesus was that way with the disciples. Let's begin there. He had 70-plus disciples. Out of the 70 plus, he handpicked 12. He knew their qualities and knew those 12 had something he needed in that intimate relationship that the others did not have. There were 58 other disciples among the 70 that Jesus discounted not as disciples, but as the ones who could live with him on a daily basis and carry his message to Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost and beyond. How did he know that? He knew them. He knew them. He didn't come to Matthew and said, follow me, let me make you fishers of men. Who did he do that to? The fishermen. He did it to the fishermen. He knew his people. He created special opportunities for them. And the three were different than the 12. He had that relationship. Your children are different by gender. They are different by birth order. Birth order makes a difference in how your children will perceive their world. And they're different by their skills. Treat them that way. Give them special opportunities that are equal to their tasks and their abilities and their desires. Third, lower your guard. Lower your guard. Jesus let the disciples see him when he was angry. The disciples saw him when he was sad. They saw him when he was tired. They saw him when he was detached and wanted to be apart from the crowd. They saw that. They could relate to him. And I'm telling you this, fathers. Let me just tell you four things. Number one, you can apologize. It is within your purview as a father or grandfather to apologize. Learn how to say to your children, not to your wife about your children, Learn how to say to your children, I am sorry, I was wrong. And forget adding the word but at the end of that. I'm sorry, but you know how that makes your daddy mad. Or I apologize, but I've had a bad day at work. Leave that off. If you're going to apologize, apologize. And learn how to do that. I'm going to tell you something. If you have not apologized to your children, you're either saying you've lived a perfect life in regards to them, in which case you should apologize to God, or you're just too proud to utter those words. Learn how to apologize to your children. Number two, you can redirect and adjust. You won't always get it right. John talked about taking a vacation with the kids. I mean, I may say, hey, I got a great idea. This year, we're taking a week's vacation and we're going to the World of Yogurt. Because I've always wanted to go to that museum. There isn't one. Some of y'all look horrified. I just made that up. You may have every intention of that being a wonderful vacation, but your kids may not love that at all. Redirect. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know what, I think I made a mistake. We're going to go to Legoland instead. Yay! Now you're a hero. Redirect. Learn how to do that. Adjust in the circumstances. I would say this, and I think that as a general rule, I'm going to just say this, what John said about studying the Bible is very appropriate and doing that on a regular basis. But there may be times when you have to adjust that. Don't be so rigid. Don't be so rigid that you break. Learn to bend. You'll teach your children something about bending too, and that's very important. Number three, you can admit your ignorance and your shortcomings. It's not wrong to say dads or grandfathers or men, I'm not real sure about that. I just don't know. Don't bluff your way through that. Your kids will see that, and they'll lose respect for you. It's okay to say you don't know and that shortcoming is there. And the final point, we're coming right down to the wire, perfect timing. You can be afraid and you can doubt. It's not wrong to tell your children that you're afraid of some things. I know sometimes you have to bluff your way through. I realize that. Sometimes you do have to be strong when they aren't just because somebody needs to be. That's a mark of a leader. But it's okay to tell them afterwards, I was kind of scared about it. Yeah, that was one big spider. All right, that's it. I'm done. Questions? Anything? John.